You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, here we are again, another episode of Live Free, Think Free. I'm Micah. I'm here with my friend and fellow host, Derek. How are you, Derek?
I'm doing well, man. It's good to be back. It's been at least a couple of weeks since we've been here at the show, so I'm glad we're making time. This is not our usual day. It's Friday evening, but you know what? We figured, why not go ahead and catch up? I know we've got stories about Houston and Texas and COVID news, and I got a couple stories, international news, some Mexico things going on you might want to hear about. And yeah, so we do this every week, typically, usually, and usually on a Thursday or a Wednesday. And sometimes with our buddy Johnny. So we're all over the place. But you can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We've been broadcasting since 2011, guys. And based on our – this can't be right, Micah. It says the last show was January 5th. Has it really been that long? I must have forgotten to do a show. There had to be one after that. Maybe I'm wrong. I think you're muted, brother. Yeah, I think we did a show after this. It had to have done a show.
We might have done a show, but it's been a very long time.
It's been a while, yeah. Okay, well, we'll check that out. Either way, this is the place you can find our archives, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. So after tonight's episode, I'll upload this and you can come here and click here like you could see for the episode January 5th, Blindly Trusting the Science Fails Again. Look at that. You can listen to the audio or the video version, and you can see all the links that we cover with each episode. So be sure to follow us there. And if you listen on Spotify right now, we're live on Odyssey, Rockfin, a couple of Facebook pages, and this will get posted on BitChute and elsewhere, Hive. But if you listen on Spotify, if you like to listen to things on Spotify, you can find Live Free, Think Free. Search for that picture of Micah, myself, and Johnny, and you can join us there. So, yeah, we're joining you guys for a Friday evening. We'll be with you for about the next hour or so before we check out. Yeah, Micah, how you feeling though? Anything you want to say before we dive into the news? I know sometimes we rush right into it, but how is your post January? Is it freezing right there in Houston right now? Right?
It's cold, not freezing, but it's pretty cool, cold. The weather did just lift as far as all the rain we've been having for a week. And that kind of, I think some spirits lifted too, because the blue skies are out and it's cool. We got a full moon right now. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the show. It's been a while, so we've got a lot of different information that'll probably get leaked out in between the stories. But we're going to try to stay focused. I'm glad to see we've already got some people joining us for tonight's episode. And we definitely want to mention that we, as you pointed out, we maintain all the articles there on the HoustonFreethinkers.com. So if you're interested in this conversation, you want to go further, all the articles that we discuss tonight will be there. And of course, all our archives are on Spotify as well. So welcome. And I guess we should get into it. We do have some interesting, hey, well, I was curious.
I think there might be a slight delay on our end. So I'll try not to step over your toes. I know we had some Houston and some Texas news. I wanted to start, if you're okay with it, Micah, with this one that I think you found. I think we both found it, but separately, about it's Houston, but it's also to COVID. And as typical, as has been typical for now 3 years, we're going to have quite a few things to say about COVID-19 in this case, lawsuits and just overall. But this one has a local and a COVID connection. So maybe this is a good place to start, Micah, before we get into some other. You want to take this one?
I was going to say, hey, do you want to get into that one? And then I can talk about the others, because I know, as you said, there's a lot of other COVID stuff. But I'm
okay.
Whatever. I saw you had a better link.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's just two links. I don't know if it's same information or if it's just this is a local story here. But I'll lead off here with this one. It says that this doctor who I remember we talked about, Dr. Mary Bowden, she had her $25 million COVID-19 defamation lawsuit against Houston Methodist Hospital dismissed. For those of you who've been following us since at least, what, it was 2021, 2022 when it all went down? I can't quite remember. Where Houston Methodist became the first hospital, not only in Houston, but in the entire country, to mandate the shots for their nurses. And then some nurses, including Jennifer Bridges, who we interviewed several times on this show, staged a walkout and, you know, made a big deal, and it made the news for a little while. the nurses sued the hospital. They unfortunately also lost their lawsuit. Well, around the same time, Dr. Mary Tally Bowden who was working as an ear, nose, and throat doctor, she started to speak out about, here she is, a picture of her. She started to speak out about her concerns about the COVID shots and different things. And you might remember, Micah, the boss over at Methodist, I think his name's Mark Boom, something along those lines. Yeah, Mark Boom, the CEO of the Methodist healthcare system. He started issuing statements pushing back against her comments on social media, including she was supporting ivermectin. And the mainstream, of course, still claims there's no positive benefits of ivermectin. And basically, she was telling people that if they were unvaccinated, that they, you know, they didn't need to get the vaccine. And she was speaking out about the mandates and different things like that. So Mark Boom, the CEO of the hospital healthcare system, starts kind of talking some trash to her publicly. And so she decided to sue, saying that this was doing damage to her. Her reputation by being announced comes as, quote, misinformation. Unfortunately, the judge, agreed with disagreed with her attempt to get it dismissed, or for her lawsuit, and dismissed the lawsuit. And the judge said that her privileges were suspended. The hospital said this for spreading false information. And they said that her lawsuit, quote, claimed that she was named by Houston for correcting her admittedly false statement that the hospital turned away unpaid patients. And so they continue on here, but long, I think it's maybe there's some like minutia, like, well, what exactly were they claiming? Well, she did say, like, they're arguing that she said that the hospital wasn't going to treat unvaccinated people. And they're saying, no, that's not quite true. But they did also, I would say, defame her character by saying she was spreading disinformation about the COVID shots, things that we have talked about here that we know now have been proven true, that people have been harmed, even if they say it's a rare thing that people have been harmed and injured. But it's interesting because these lawsuits are still going on.
If she said they weren't accepting unvaccinated people and they're like, look, she's spreading misinformation, you know, but what if she's not wrong about the other aspects? You get what I mean here? There's only which aspect of information that she spread was the misinformation. I mean, was it, you know, they say it admittedly, you know, so was it that if it was only that part, like if they're saying, look, she said they were turning away unvaccinated people, and they're like, look, that's enough to say she's spreading misinformation. And all this crazy stuff about ivermectin, and you see what I mean? Throw in the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if that's really the case, yeah,
it's not 100% clear what they're focused on.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing I think happens sometimes with the news, right? So the public reads it and they're just like, look, she's a kook. You know, she even admitted she was wrong about it. And then she tried to sue them. And, you know, it's just like,
and the lawsuit got dismissed, so obviously she's wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like that's, yeah. Well, in another misinformation battle, I want to just talk about this other one before we get back to some Houston, Texas news, because this is happening in California. I know we've got listeners over in California as well. Judge halts California COVID misinformation law. So on one hand, we've got a doctor suing a hospital for talking trash about her, saying that, you know, they were discrediting her and harming her reputation. And they claim, nope, she was spreading disinformation, misinformation, and the lawsuit's allowed to go forward. This is a law that was put forth in California, which would have allowed state regulators to discipline physicians who spread misinformation about COVID-19, which obviously can also be very problematic. That's like basically what happened to this woman here in Texas, right? You know, you think about that. That's without even a law in place. She started speaking out. They accused her of misinformation. She lost her job. She can't sue them to, you know, get some damages for her reputation. A federal judge a couple of weeks ago halted enforcement of a recently enacted California law that would allow state regulators to discipline physicians who spread misinformation. In a 30-page opinion, U.S. District Judge William Shub granted a preliminary injunction to physicians who sued Governor Gavin Newsom and the state's medical board over Assembly Bill 2098, a law that allows the medical board to discipline doctors who share information about COVID that is not a part of the, quote, contemporary scientific consensus. Shub said that the language of the law was unconstitutionally vague and ordered the state to stop enforcement of it. The lawsuit was filed in November, and one of the plaintiffs, who actually I want to interview soon, and maybe we'll have him on this show. He's written a book recently, and he's got some interesting things to say. Dr. Aaron Curity, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's got a Substack, and he's been outspoken. He's one of the plaintiffs. He said on Twitter after this, the ruling bodes well for our case. It indicates that our arguments that this law is unconstitutional have strong pretrial facial plausibility. Not to get ahead of ourselves, of course, or to try to predict the final outcome, but this is a very positive development. The plaintiffs, including the doctor that we were just quoting, says that the law violates First Amendment and impairs the ability, doctors' ability to treat their patients. So that's obviously just the latest in that saga. It's not done yet, but for the moment, that bill has been struck down in California. And I think that is a pretty dangerous. People tend to see, wouldn't you say, Micah, that whatever we think about the mainstream allopathic medicine, that people tend to believe that there's supposed to be some kind of sacred relationship between patient and doctor, right? That like the state and other people shouldn't be able to come between that. It's just like your doctor giving you advice and consulting with you, but you make the decision.
I think people are capable of holding inconsistent beliefs. And yes, I do think people hold the belief you just said, but at the same time feel justified. At least it seemed, given our recent experience in the mainstream, with pushing something counter to that belief on everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing too, right? Is that the danger of this, and that's why I talk actually titled today's show, Who Defines Disinformation or Misinformation, right? Because it's hard to know. We've got court saying this doctor who is saying statements that I think we can prove are accurate, factual, grounded in reality, at least some version of reality. But then a court says, nope, you don't have a standing claim. You were spreading misinformation. And there's some maybe confusion about what exactly they're pointing to. But the point is, anybody who's saying things they don't like is misinformation, disinformation. California tries to pass a law, is trying to pass a law saying doctors can't give advice if it goes against the consensus. I mean, that's just dangerous territory in my mind. But yeah, it just goes back to this whole ecosystem we've been in the last couple of years of fact checkers and misinformation and disinformation, and governments claiming this is Russian disinformation. And then later on, we find out, like in the case of the Hunter Biden laptop story, oh, wait, never mind. There's no evidence. It was just a bunch of people claiming that. And then the news reporting disinformation, misinformation. And now that the damage is done, we are supposed to step back and say, okay, well, what is truth? What was really factual? And I don't know, it just gets so messy here for, I think, the average person even trying to decipher what's going on. Like you said a moment ago with the Dr. Mary Bowden and her lawsuit, somebody reads that, it's like, oh, look, this kooky doctor was spreading misinformation and they dismissed her lawsuit because clearly she has no standing and, you know, and there's no reason to listen to anything she's saying. It's this disinformation, misinformation thing is a dangerous, dangerous word, I think, the way they're weaponizing.
I think it is, and I do think that in science you have to have some sort of, you know, falsifiability, some sort of repeatability, you know, so that they have a little community of people that can, you know, experience the same results when put to the test. I mean, that's basically science, right? So then I want to couple that idea with the idea that the sky was falling, you know, we're on a pandemic, you know, everybody be afraid, wear a mask, double mask, kids might not be able to go to school, you probably won't be able to get groceries, all the stores are shut, you know, et cetera. You can't go visit people, you know, all your relatives in the assisted livings, those sort of things were shut in. Venues couldn't even host musical events and artistic creation was stymied except for like in the studio. And underground shows and such. But, you know, all that happened, okay? But everybody wants to be like, okay, think about it. You have people that work in a field, and then something that's never happened before happens. And somehow they're all supposed to have the instantaneous same view of it, right or wrong, is what I'm getting to here. So, like, is it outside? You know, I get it after a point, let's just say, that there's somebody out there that said something that was so contrary to the narrative that it could be proven to be just unhealthy, like, eat as much garbage as you want, eat more cheeseburgers all day long, you know, something like, you know, absurd that is, you know, it doesn't even have to be absurd, but just to be outside the narrative, but incorrect. I see how then the group that you're in has the right to censor that person. But if you're in the role of acting as a medical doctor at the cutting edge of something that's never been known before, and let's just say you don't see it as clear as some of the others, or let's say you have a different view of the of it than the others, how can we jump on this sort of like almost absolutist, you know, view that, okay, you can't practice medicine anymore. You know, you're to be shunned in society and ridiculed in the papers. You know, I don't know, because once we get that way, everybody's going to get information quickly. They're going to just toe the party line, you know, and then we'll be in the situation where we need a kid to tell us the emperor doesn't have any clothes, basically, because I just don't see how you can expect in any field when something catastrophically different happens, all the experts to have the same view to begin with, even if it wasn't this that we're talking about.
Yeah, especially in the case, like you said, Michael, when it's allegedly a novel virus that we don't know much about and, you know, times, you know, yeah, lots to say there. Well, let's continue, guys. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We do this every week. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We've been broadcasting since 2011, underground news, uncensored news, underground music. Maybe it works both ways. Uncensored music, underground news, maybe both, right?
We've had some underground news. I won't deny that.
We have, and we've had some uncensored music as well. But let's go back to some Texas happenings for a couple of stories, and we'll take a music break, come back with some more. I got an update on the fluoride and much more coming in the second half. Go ahead, Micah.
Certainly. And, you know, sometimes we phrase them as Texas stories because that's where we're kind of rooted. But at the same time, you know, that COVID story, you know, it applies to the nation. You know, a lot of these stories do apply, you know, to our listeners beyond here. But this one might not so much. And I want to be in and out of some of these. This is out of the Dallas Morning News. Turns out that a North Texas lawmaker files a constitutional amendment to legalize casino gambling in Texas. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But a representative from the Dallas-Fort Worth area has filed legislation to legalize casino and sports gambling in Texas. I don't think of that as a great industry or anything like that. But, you know, if you support freedom, then why would you get in the way of people wanting to take really crazy odds and lose a lot of their money? But, yeah, so that's something happening. If you're into that, you'll want to watch for that constitutional amendment to come up.
I think that is interesting, though, Micah, just before we jump off that one, because Texas is a place that a lot of people see as being a free place, and I think it is to some degree. But just on that specific notion of, like you said, should there need to be a constitutional amendment that says you have the right to gamble your money away if you want, and to do that in a specific business where that's the, you know, that's the purpose of being there, is to go gamble and play slot machines and this and that. I just think it's pretty crazy when, and maybe it's just because I'm naive and clueless still at my age, just to recognize more and more the ways that government is so intrusive into people's lives and, you know, regulations and licenses and all these things that you're expected to pay. And I remember the first time I found out that even if you don't live in the United States, that the IRS expects you to report to them the money you make in other places in the world and other pieces of land, that they still think that you owe them something for that. And yeah, sometimes these things just blow my mind. They think they own you. That's what I think about it, what I feel like, but yeah. I just thought that's worth noting, because maybe that's not something people are like, what do you mean? You can't gamble in Texas. Like, there's a constitutional amendment, you know, or just the different, different ways that the state still interferes. Obviously, maybe that's not the biggest right we're going to be fighting for per se, but it is just another way government is impeding on people just doing what they want.
I think there's a flip way of taking some of the facts that you just spoke about. You know, whenever it's time to go ahead and take a little freedom away, it doesn't take a constitutional amendment, it seems. They'll just step right around that piece of paper and go ahead and, you know, tase you. But I do think it's funny when you want a little bit, just open the door a little bit, it takes, you know, every lawyer and politician and lobbyist in all these different levels of government to go ahead and give you permission to do something that doesn't hurt anyone anyway, except yourself, perhaps.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, let's jump to this next one. This one, if this is where you wanted to go, this is interesting to me because, like you said, besides being based in Texas, it's something that I think would be relevant to people all over, as far as places with state parks and places with preserves and nature preserves and areas that you want to protect.
Certainly. And I imagine that there can be a lot of questions brought up in this article of different ways of viewing the role of corporations, government, parks, and all kinds of things. Of course, I got my own opinions, but let's just get into the story. It says that we're on the verge of losing a massive state park that we've had for 50 years. And I thought, if nothing else, I want to talk about this to remind people, you know, that there's so many beautiful places to get out to. And, you know, these things do change over your lifetime. You know, you're not the youngest spring chicken any longer, Derek, and you know this to be a fact. Like, these things change. So it turns out that they're going to lose this place. It's about 100 miles southeast of Dallas, Fort Worth. So that means it's in between Houston and Dallas. And because I did not know this, the owner plans to sell it to a developer. And I was like, the owner? And it turns out that a private company had been leasing this massive state park to the state. And I was like, huh? You know what I mean? I mean, that's I guess that's okay. But, you know, it does bring up some questions about how that all got into being. But it turns out it's an 1,800-acre state park and it holds a 2,400-acre lake that's, hiking, biking, horseback, fishing. And who knows now that it won't be a state park, what will happen to that, you know, ecosphere there. But, yeah, it turns out this company named Vistra Corp., they gave the Texas Parks and Wildlife a 2-year notice that is going to end the lease. In 2021, the park and the lake was listed for sale at $110 million. So if y'all want to come together, you know, there's a little property over here. As the largest private water, think of that, you know, I mean, water's a big resource. You know, I remember I shouldn't even date myself that much, but who would have thought we would consume so much plastic bottled water? So the largest private water offering in the state of Texas. So somebody can go buy, you know, 2,400 acres of water pretty soon that used to be a state park. Until recently, the park has remained open and unsold. Last year, 82,000 visitors came to the park. So I thought that was a lot of little information. I think there's a lot of stories that go through that we wouldn't normally think about, you know, in our being concerned about abuse and pro-freedom and anti-war. But there's a lot of little stories that tell you what's going on that nobody ever tells you otherwise.
And that, I think that's interesting. So, like, it was already owned by a private corporation?
Yeah, Vistra Corp. And, you know, we could do a little more research, you know, and go into finding out more about Vistra Corp. And how they came into being. And, you know, did they just happen to own, you know, it could have been a family group, you know, it could have been anything. Did they just happen to own land that then they started leasing? Or did they run out ahead of the creation of parks and buy up land and lease it to the government for 50 plus years? Who knows? But it's questions. Wow. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Little things like these articles, they have all these questions hidden in them, you know, and they're hidden in all these other articles, of, you know, the mainstream articles that are telling you how to think about this and that and the other thing. So this show because of that.
I think you're right. There's a lot of there's pieces that we can pull out of these stories. So even things that don't immediately jump out to people as like the most sensational viral stories, there's still things to consider. And we enjoy diving deeper into these topics, not just hitting you with a bunch of news one after the other, trying to find things that do matter. So we hope you guys enjoy that. This next one relates to Houston, but again, inflation, something happening all over the country. And I know that in the past couple months, Michael, we were finding stories that were saying that inflation was hitting parts of the U.S., but Houston was kind of being affected at a different level. But now this one kind of seems to be saying the opposite.
Yeah, we saw that Houston was being hit at a higher than average level. So you're correct. Okay, that's what it was. Eric, it was being hit at a different level. And now what it's saying is it's taking longer to cool off. So it got hotter and now it's taking longer to cool off. And what they're saying is across the nation, inflation is cooling off, at least according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which I've already been reading articles about questions there that I intend to bring to this show eventually. But if not, you can go out there and research, you know, the BLS and their data. But humid, and we've done one story on them already with the jobs data about a year ago. But Houston consumers may not have noticed any relief. You might not have noticed going to the store that prices have been coming, like, cooling off. Like, it ain't going up as fast. That doesn't mean, you know, it's going down. It just ain't going up as fast across the nation. Prices in the Houston, Woodlands, and Sugarland area, they say it did decline 1.5% over November and December, bringing inflation over the past 12 months to 5.3%. And this is their numbers, right? Regional inflation data released over every other month. Over the course of 2022, the region saw slighter greater price increases than the nation as a whole, with the inflation in July climbing past 10%. And just think of that. If you work in Houston, did you get a 10% or higher raise? If not, you are losing ground. So this is how inflation affects you. That's not the to say that Houston consumers and businesses are seeing any sort of meaningful relief. Rising prices over the last year have cut deeply into the purchasing power as we're looking to spend, you know, money that we saved during the pandemic. That's at least their story. Price of staples it remains stubborn. Lehigh eggs increased another 1% in December, and I just saw rice in another article went up 23.5%. I mean, these are like, and so you start coupling, you know, the stuff stuck in the ships, the slowdown of the supply, and then all the food problems that are happening, and it's all feeding into, you know, quite a I guess you could say economic storm of some sort. And maybe it's just a little light rain. I don't know. But 10% inflation is pretty severe. So, yeah. So they're saying.
And, you know, and those are just the numbers they're willing to admit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you go to Shadow Stats, you can find other inflation numbers, including the numbers that they used back in, I think it was up to like 86 or something. I don't remember the exact year, but it was in the 80s where they counted pretty much everything until they started taking out the things that you and me and everybody spends most of our money on, you know, like food and electricity and gasoline and all these consumer things. They basically aren't counted in there.
Wow. Well, that's definitely something else to consider, guys, because these are the we've talked about this before, Micah, because you tend to keep up with the inflation stories in different ways and how sometimes I think people feel it if they're paying any attention at the grocery store when they go there and they're like, wow, my eggs are more expensive or my meat or whatever it is, you know, that they're buying. But a lot of times I think people aren't so, at least this has just been my experience, that some people, let's say, are not as conscious of that and are just kind of consuming and maybe not keeping up with those. Maybe they notice like, oh, that's a little bit different this week, but they're not consciously thinking about it in terms of inflation and how much it's eating away their purchasing power and all these different ways you were just discussing.
I think you're right. And I think we've had a really interesting show as well. And I see that there's some interesting questions and comments. And if you got a moment, maybe we could take some of them like this one here.
That one covers up half the screen. So hold on, let me see if we can change the. yeah, I was going to talk about that one in a moment whenever we get to the song, if we can. Good. Let's get through. Do you have one more story? I know you wanted to get to Texas, so maybe we should cover that one.
Maybe pull that one. Oh, yeah, first. Yeah, for sure.
You got one about Houston schools.
And this has been happening for a while. We've covered it, so I felt obliged to continue the story. And maybe this is old news for some of our listeners, but maybe some haven't heard. And again, if you don't have a kid in HISD and you have any interest in how education occurs or who controls it, you know, it's a battle of hearts and minds, and these are the most vulnerable hearts and minds. I won't even talk about the horrible stories that I had to leave off of today. But this one. So, you know, we think about who should govern these school boards if we're even going to have them, right? So it turns out that officials from Houston and the TEA, that's the Texas Education Agency, the state agency that decides how to run, you know, the state school, are expected to argue the case once again as laws governing state intervention of failing schools have changed as the years-long case has progressed. The outcome could have implications for other struggling public schools when it comes to state intervention. Obviously, this is a premier case, right? This is the first one like it. Friday's order reverses a lower court's decision, and this is probably from about 3 weeks ago, that temporarily halted education commissioners from appointing a board of managers to replace the locally elected trustees. Okay. So I come in and say, you know, this bigger government's decided that your locally elected trustees aren't working. They're not following the rules. Bump, bump, bump. So, yeah, there goes your local control. By that point, the state had already installed a conservator to oversee operations. Before the commissioner took that dramatic action, Houston school officials won a temporary injunction barring Morath from appointing a board of managers. The state appealed. As the case wound its way through the court system, the legislature changed relevant elements of the education code related to state intervention in districts. So it's going over here. In one hand, it's going through the court districts to figure it out, you know, what's going to happen, as if the court's going to decide. Meanwhile, the legislature, another branch, another arm, another tentacle of government, is over there, you know, changing the rules. So they changed relevant elements of the education code related to state intervention in districts. Exactly what's going on, right? So the state level government changed the rules whereby they could let themselves and their tentacles get involved in districts while the court case is going on. The Texas Supreme Court justices found that Houston ISD failed to show that the plans would violate the amended law. Boop. Didn't make it in time for the deadline. No more local control. They sent the case back to trial court while vacating a temporary injunction. Quote, we expect the parties to reconsider their positions and supplement the record in light of changes in the law and factual developments within the district, justices wrote. We remand the case to the trial court for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. Successful takeover of Texas's largest school district would give state officials dramatic power over thousands of children's minds. I mean, education, information, indoctrination, something like that. What do you think, Derek?
I think that these stories are interesting as far as, you know, the state getting involved with taking over school districts or certain schools, because, you know, there probably are, and I imagine, especially in Texas, this is talking about North Texas and then probably other schools by the border that are kind of forgotten and underfunded, and maybe the kids aren't, they're not getting good test scores. But then, of course, that opens up the whole conversation of, is the way that they're trying to measure these kids' worth and whether they're accomplishing things even worth anything, right? I would argue not. You know, so without getting into like a whole discussion on the school system and my opinions about it being a failure and not worth it, the fact of the matter is that for some kids, school might be the only way to get away from a violent home, or, you know, to get some lunch or something, different things like that. You do have real situations where school is maybe providing at least some level of positive impact on a child's life, not to say the propaganda, but maybe just the place to be for some kids who have nowhere else to be or worse places to be. But then there's, you know, these schools being underfunded. Yeah, not having enough staff. I saw one of them, it was saying like some of the schools in North Texas are accused of financial mismanagement, right? So nobody's looking. Maybe the kids' money that's supposed to go to help the kids get new school books or whatever is being spent on hookers or who knows, right? There's all kinds of things probably going on in this. And I don't know how I feel. Obviously, like my first feeling is an aversion to the idea of, oh no, the state and their institutions getting more involved in this and that. But then there are other people who would say, well, no, the other thing is, you know, there are people who are very much against like charter schools, for example, and like the private schools and private companies getting involved in education and what that could mean. And so I don't know. I don't know that there's any perfect situation here, and it sucks because the kids are in there one way or the other. Whether or not I think they should be in those institutions is a whole nother thing. They're there. And so I don't know if it's going to be better or worse if the government gets more involved or the TEA or some private corporation. I don't know. I think these are messy situations probably.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think a lot of people do. And maybe that's in some sort of way, perhaps the best answer, at least the one I can see, is in the end, leave it up to the parent. You know, I mean, if you want to plug them into the state school, plug them into the state school. If you want to plug them into a company school, plug them into a company school. If you want them to have a set of tutors that you pay to get through, and then so do it. But realize it's not something you can just like take as, you know, off the cuff thing, just sending them here or there. That's one of the reasons we've covered so many of the horrific stories that have occurred, you know, abuses in the school districts, is because I feel like it's not such a decision to take lightly, like, okay, just send Johnny or Jane to school. Okay, everything's okay. Send them to that school down the street that's, you know, run by the ISD. You know, they must background check everyone. Well, if there was a restaurant that had as many abuses as we've talked about in the ISDs that surround Houston, those businesses would have been shut down. Am I wrong, Barry?
I agree, right?
So this is something to think about. You know, it's pressing on us now. There's so many conversations that are pressing on us. Like, how do we raise our children? You know, this is pressing on society. So I don't want to go too far with that, but I think that's the best thing we can do from a freedom perspective is all these other institutions are going to create their like one size fits all machine. But as long as it's left to the parent, we still have the option for freedom for some lucky kid. But the minute that's gone, I don't know what to say.
I agree. We need a freedom of choice in there. All right, guys, we're going to go to a music break, and I will address that comment you saw a moment ago, Micah. It's a big question, so I don't know if we'll put it on the screen, but Frederick was asking, a kid asks his mother, are there any artists, musicians, poets that are deemed anti-vaccines, anti-WEF? I was asked, do I know any? Oh, wait, the person said they named Van Morrison and Eric Clapton, and they were asked, do I know anyone under 65? So my question, do you have a list is there one of current musicians of any genre that have anti-jab, anti-World Economic Forum songs? I don't have list of that specifically personally, but I know there's a lot of truth musicians, conscious musicians that we play on this show, but maybe you guys can comment to us and tell us if there's specifically anti-World Economic Forum, you know, vaccine truth songs.
I've heard some vaccine rap coming through, and I like it that he's open any genre. I think there might even be some one-liners off on some of the stuff that you've brought to this show that I'm just not super familiar with. Also, you're muted.
There's definitely some stuff that fits that criteria, but yeah, please do, guys, if you're listening, whether you're listening on Facebook, Odyssey, YouTube, if you want to go ahead and comment, who are your favorite truth, conscious, et cetera, musicians, any genre? There's so happens to be quite a bit of conscious hip hop artists, but I know that's not the only genre that we've seen of people who've been outspoken. But I'm going to play a song from my new album, which we released just a couple of weeks back. And I played my first show recently. Maybe we'll play a clip of that later on in the show if we have time. And this is the first song off my album. You can find it at 33ishere.com, and you can listen on Spotify and all the usual places if you want to pick it up there. So this is Inner Space from 33. We'll be right back. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free.
Check 1, 2. Transmutation. 33. Welcome to my world.
On this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day.
I'm on top of the world and I can see it all from here. There's nothing I can't do, so I let go of the fear. Come climb inside while we traverse the stars. I promise we ain't lost, man, we're headed to Mars. But this ain't out of space, yo, this is the inside, the place in your mind where your fears reside. This is the inner journey you've been waiting on, all the healing and growth you've been skating on. Thin ice is no place for those heavy shoulders. We all feel the struggle but keep fighting like soldiers. Buying flashy cars, trying to master battle scars. You can keep on running, man, but you ain't gonna get far.
Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day.
Try to outrun myself, but I'm everywhere I go. I can't escape, feels like failure's all I know. Meanwhile, mentally, I'm all over the place. They say bipolar, it's written all over my face. I'm one bad day away from losing my mind, but even if I survive, it's the same every time. I'm only
only getting out of bed on the slim chance that I might make it. I might go the distance to see what lies out on the edge, the place most dare not even tread, cause living close to death is my only comfort. I'm still fighting, still trying to find self-worth. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Most days I can't complain, stay high to numb the pain. When the party dies down, the nightmares return, I drown in a pool of my mistakes, in my own self-hate. I can't escape, I can't even put food on my plate. Maybe you can't relate, I pop pills to kill what I have done. It's nothing new under the sun, just enough to consider the gun. I can't stop running, ain't nowhere to run. You know the feeling, there's someone better. I promise I'm fine, but never say never, cause tomorrow ain't coming. To those who don't live, don't doubt yourself, your gift is yours to give. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day. Come on this journey inside my mind, I promise you will see to the top we climb. Got better things to do, big things on the way, just gotta make it through the struggles of every day.
All right, 33 is here, literally.
Yeah, what's up? Welcome back to Live Free, Think Free. That was a song called Inner Space off my debut album, Transmutation. You can find it at 33ishere.com. Thank you guys for tuning into that. And as a reminder, again, you can find the archives of this show, the history of our show at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We'll be posting all the stories we've covered so far. So we've been talking about COVID disinformation, talking about state parks being taken by private companies and schools might be taken by the state or other private companies and things happening in schools. And it's a busy world out there. We got some more coming your way. We hope you guys will stay tuned in with us. And, you know, I want to mention, Micah, we haven't talked about this in a while, but maybe we can get back to it at some point, that we're not on KPFT in Houston at the moment. We're still affiliated with them, but we're not on the FM air anymore, but we're doing our show as we always have, broadcasting it through the internet. And once the schedule's updated, we'll get back on FM or maybe some other stations out there that might want to work with us. We're going to continue to broadcast and bringing you important information that we think matters and that you're not just going to hear on every other podcast or, you know, YouTube channel out there that, you know, that just kind of repeats the same thing the mainstream's repeating. We try to dig deeper and ask important questions. And one of those aspects that I know has always been a favorite part of the show, Micah, once we had the ability, was taking calls. So I want to get us back to a place, and we're going to figure this out pretty soon, how we can take calls on this show, whether we're live on KPFT or not, because we enjoy reading the comments from you guys and seeing them. But I'm sure more of you would call in if we gave you the opportunity. And that was always our favorite part of the show, not just blabbing about and sharing our opinions and our views, but hearing from you guys. Especially, I always loved when people would call the station and tell us how much they hated what we were saying.
That funny guy.
Yeah, there's people who would get really like, just flustered and couldn't even communicate. And then other people who are like, thank you guys for having this conversation. You know, people who are grateful that we were asking the questions we were asking on the FM air in Houston, the fourth largest city, 4+ million people in the United States. And yeah, we're happy to do it. So thank you guys all for the support. Let's go ahead and jump back in to our stories. I know we got a few more. We're going to get into some COVID stuff. Micah, I just wanted to give an update on one we did a couple of weeks ago. A previous article I wrote about this, this fluoride trial that was taking place in 2020 and then got delayed until just recently. I covered this back in January. Actually, I think if you go to this episode from January 5th that I called Blindly Trusting the Science Fails Again, that was in reference to this fluoride study that we covered then, which was saying that internal CDC emails show that the Assistant Secretary for Health, Rachel Levine, specifically intervened to stop the release of this fluoride monograph, this review of all the existing literature, which was supposed to be released in May 2022, we've learned, and has not been released. We found out why. Well, there was intervention from the Assistant Secretary of Health, as well as the Office of the Director of the NIH, which is a gentleman that I'd never heard of before, Lawrence Trabuck, I think, And so that was kind of an explosive story. And I will say as well, Micah, side note, I've been cutting up these clips, and I'm going to cut a clip of this one, for example. And some people, I know that you guys might not have time or to consume the whole hour plus show we do. It seems like some of you enjoy the clips. So we're going to keep doing that for the individual stories when we can, when they're relevant and important and interesting to you guys, because so many of you seemed to be curious about this story. The video we did for this one last time, it got shared far and wide. So thank you guys for that. Well, here's the update on that. Before, we had emails proving Assistant Secretary of Health Rachel Levine intervened in that. Well, we got more information. There was a hearing in January 12th, and so it's been a couple weeks, in the fluoride trial, and the judge basically ruled, the short version, the judge ruled, Edward Chen ruled, to push the next hearing till April, so it got delayed a little bit further. But the government, the EPA, was trying to get the judge to delay it till the summer, maybe even till next year. They're just trying to push this off forever. And the attorneys for the plaintiffs for the Fluoride Action Network and other organizations who've been suing the EPA now for years, they were able to convince the judge, let's just give it a 3-month delay, come back. And at this point, the judge is going to decide whether or not he's going to release this report from the National Toxicology Program, which, again, has been kept from the public and was prevented from being released by officials within the CDC and the NIH. And I have a quote here from Jay Sanders, who's the Education and Outreach Director of the Fluoride Action Network. He told me as part of this article, the Fluoride Action Network is pleased that the court rejected the EPA's renewed request for a 6-month delay of the trial. The EPA's callousness towards the millions of U.S. children currently at risk of neurotoxic harm from fluoridation ought to concern every parent, grandparent, and future parent. So there wasn't a whole lot of new things that came out, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but there are a couple of important things that I do want to explain to those who've been following this saga, and especially about these emails that I've referenced here. Now, we got some new information where after those emails were released and presented to the court, presented to the judge, for one thing that was interesting, Micah, whenever, you know, you would expect that this was going to be like a big thing, that the judge was like, oh my God, these emails clearly show that these agencies are, you know, intervening to stop the release of this report. But the judge didn't really seem to kind of buy it. He wasn't necessarily buying the government's argument that we should delay this forever. He told them, in fact, he's like, optimistically, we might have a final report, and that's a big if, within a year. So he's like, if I listen to you at the EPA, we might get a report in a year. It might never come based on this. But it was interesting that Michael Connett, the lawyer for the Fluoride Action Network, as he started to bring up, he reminded the judge of the unusual process that this NTP study has gone through. It's gone through more than 5 reviews with multiple experts, and it still hasn't been released. And when he started to talk about the emails, like, judge, in these emails, they show interference from the Assistant Health Secretary. Judge Chen interrupted, and he said, yeah, I know. I'm familiar with the briefs you submitted and the narrative you believe, but the NTP study is not finalized, even if you believe we have enough evidence. So it was kind of like, whoa, okay, he's not necessarily interested in hearing about quote-unquote conspiracies about why this study hasn't been released, even though that's what the emails show. And maybe that's not the job of a judge, I guess. Maybe that's the job of a journalist, but nonetheless, it was kind of interesting. But Connett, Michael Connett, the attorney for Fluoride Action Network, he brought it up again. He said, quote, clearly we have seen that higher authorities within the Department of Health and Human Services have the ability to influence Dr. Wojciech's decision on this report. And so Dr. Wojciech, this is where it gets a little interesting. This is a man that was brought up. Dr. Wojciech is the director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, a director of the National Institutes of Health, and a director of the National Toxicology Program as of June 2020. And they're saying that he claimed responsibility for squashing this report. So after the emails were presented to the court and say, hey, look, we have somebody in these emails saying that it was Assistant Health Secretary Rachel Levine and this other guy, Office of Director, who intervened with this to stop the release of this. Well, then the EPA filed their own motion where they got a Dr. Wojciech to say, no, it was me. I'm the one who blocked this. And it was interesting that he's taking the responsibility, and he claimed that, well, he blocked the release of it, and then now he's saying we needed more reviews of this already 5 times reviewed study, and it needs to get a recommendation from some bureaucracy, which we've never heard of. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Micah. As far as I know, this is the first time it's ever been made public, called the Board of Scientific Counselors. And as the EPA, as the Fluoride Action Network's attorney, Michael Connett, wrote, he said, as EPA notes, Dr. Wojciech will make a final decision whether to publish the State of the Science monograph after receiving the recommendation of this Board of Scientific Counselors. And he said that even that's overly optimistic because, quote, it assumes that Dr. Wojcik has the power to release a report that clashes with the Department of Health and Human Services policy interests. And so it also goes on, this was interesting, it says, while Dr. Wojcik claims responsibility for making the decision to quash the report in May, as opposed to the unenviable task of publicly blaming his superiors, contemporaneous emails show that the decision was made by his boss, Assistant Secretary of Health Rachel Levine. So that is kind of interesting. This guy, you could argue or theorize that he was told to take the fall, that a, you know, your boss is being implicated in these emails as having intervened. You got to take the fall. You got to step in and say, hey, no, that was me. That wasn't my boss. That was me. I'm the one who did that. It's like I said, this is not being reported pretty much anywhere outside of the little circle of independent media, myself and maybe a couple other people, of course, here on Live Free, Think Free. But just kind of more in that saga. Clearly, there's some intervention happening. This is a good question. Why would the Assistant Secretary of Health block this information? It's the biggest study review of all the fluoride literature that exists from studies in Spain and Canada and Mexico and elsewhere. And it's supposed to come out in May 2022, and it was not released for one reason or another. And in the next couple months, maybe by April, the judge may decide to release it to the public. But so far, it's still being blocked from release. The court has access to it, but they've redacted it, like I said last time, and so they won't let people even see what's in this report. We can assume, though, it's not in favor of fluoride being the best thing ever, because I would think the government would shout that from all the rooftops if they could.
I see a parallel to a comment earlier. They got to go through all these multiple tests and everything to change something here, right? But, you know, it seems whenever there's a drive to push something on us, they don't have to go through multiple tests and such. So it's kind of like that constitutional amendment thing, you know? Like, once something gets in, it's sure a lot to pull it out of there, you know? Like, no matter which way you cut it. And that seems to be the same thing here. Why would they, you know, block the information? I'm not, you know, I don't even want to really speculate. It just seems like if their real interest is health and human services, what the heck would they have to hide from the people ever? Ever? This is about health and human services. This ain't about spy satellites. This ain't about economic policy. You know, I'm serious here, but I think this is and people just accept this.
Yeah, I think unfortunately some people do accept it, but hopefully by shining a light on this, more people will think about it. Because again, if people don't even know that this, I would guess that the vast majority of the population, including those who pay attention to things like this, don't even know that this fluoride hearings are ongoing. It's not making any major news anywhere. It's been 3 years now since it first started, but we will continue to follow it. That's the latest update. We're in February now. We're in February now, and we're not going to hear anything till April. I just will end that little section by saying, if you don't know about fluoride and the dangers, specifically water fluoridation, I do encourage you to check out fluoidealert.org. That's the Fluoride Action Network, the people who are involved in this lawsuit. It's not just them. It's the Organic Consumers Association, Food and Water Watch, a bunch of different organizations coming together, class action lawsuit against the, a lawsuit against the EPA under the Toxic Substances Control Act. And I think it really has the potential to, it's already historic, just the things that have happened, the information has come out. But so far, it seems like little tidbits like this. Oh, did you realize that one time back in 2022, it was revealed through an email in this court case you never heard of that the government was blocking the release of the study that more than likely said some bad things about fluoride? Like, will that be anywhere in the history books, or is that just going to get lost to the pages of history and the whole fluoride experiment continues? My hope is that this does go in a positive direction and you could actually see the end of water fluoridation in the U.S. Of course, this would be, there'll be still years of litigation, even if the judge ruled like, hey, you know what? And in 6 months, let's say he rules in favor of Fluoride Action Network and says, you're right, fluoride is a toxin. We have all the evidence. It violates this EPA act. Now it needs to be either totally regulated or banned altogether. That EPA is going to sue back. I mean, this is going to drag out for years, and it already has. So I'm slightly optimistic, but also very, very realistically pessimistic.
Yeah, we'll see. Right. Like you said, you know, things are entrenched. It feels like it takes more work to change them, you know, because everybody just accepts them as, you know, given already. But yeah,
it does. Well, let's continue here, guys. We've been with you for almost an hour already. I can't believe it's flying by. We've got a few more stories to cover, and this is going to begin a little section about COVID, and maybe we'll get into a few more before we wrap up tonight. Michael, you can go ahead and take this one, and I'll pick it up after you. I mean, this is just another aspect, I think, though, like, right, we talk about the misinformation, disinformation lawsuits, but wait, what about all that money that was given out? And is anybody paying attention to where it went?
We were talking about all this money before it was even given out. We were talking about all the people lining up at the trial back when we first started realizing they were shutting things down, because we're like, yeah, the next round of bailouts are going to be this. And you know, I guess that's what starts happening after a while. You can see the patterns, right? I think anybody could, right? So let's get into it just briefly. And this article, along with the rest, will be out there and you can dig deeper. But for those who want to talk about it, it turns out that, as usual, the what do they call that arm of Congress there? The GAO got a report out that is pretty much critical of every congressional program that came out to, you know, spend money in the pandemic. It ranges in the article and tells us about, you know, scams with unemployment fraud. We're already saying they had an improper payment rate of 19% in 2021 and then 22% in 2022. I mean, think about that. That's almost a quarter improper payment, right? And I don't even want to go too far into it. They say $873 billion in checks to people who said they were laid off or had hours reduced because of coronavirus. And at least $163 billion in pandemic unemployment insurance benefits could have been paid improperly. So moving on past this one, the PPP loans, and we've covered this a few times with individual just, you know, instances of them being ridiculous. This other program called the EIDL, turns out that PPP and EIDL together paid out nearly $1 trillion. These numbers, I mean, they're like, because of inflation, there's no measure to what $1 trillion is. It'd be like saying a trillion gallons, but a gallon not meaning anything anymore because a dollar doesn't mean anything anymore. So, you know, these numbers, you'll never hear them say numbers like these in the old movies because they're ridiculous, because the dollar meant, you know, something that would tie these numbers down. But nonetheless, $1 trillion, right? Yet Congress explicitly blocked the Small Business Association from using tax returns to verify a business's eligibility for the loans. How do you like that, you know? You know, so it's just, I feel like, do people know, like when we're saying, like, hey, they're going to line up at the trial, are other people going, hey, there's going to be a trial, we need to get over there and line up? And so they just already know, and so they get in there and they can write the legislation. So, no, don't check our credit. We need a whole bunch of uncredit-worthy businesses getting the loans. This sound like anything we've ever heard before? Anyway, Congress, while one may assume that the agencies should not have to, you know, try to mitigate the fraud, Congress explicitly removed legal requirements relating to policing fraud from massive coronavirus appropriation bills. Quote, although federal laws have required agencies to submit specific internal control plans for relief funds in previous emergencies, there is no such requirement for COVID-19 pandemic. No control plan for the release of funds. Lovely, right? And nearly half the states didn't even try to get the wrongly paid benefits back because it's just out there. They know they're going to spend more money chasing these poor people that got a little bit of money looting one way or another than they'll ever get back, you know? So, yeah. So there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, I could go on with it. The rental assistance.
Well, that. I think it's just, there's so many, like you said, there's so many different programs that were going on related to COVID. I just posted a comment, and I think this is a view that's become increasingly clear that, and at least in one part, this COVID operation, whatever it was, it appears very helpful, if not designed purposely, to cover up and paper over all the previous bailouts and all this stuff and the things that were going on. In fact, we talked with Catherine Austin Fitz, who we played here on this show. She's, in her opinion, she was saying she thinks that this is a big part of the fraud around COVID, the financial fraud, which was designed to cover up and kind of distract from the pre-existing.
What you're saying is another thing. If anybody goes back and listens to the archive at the beginning of COVID, we were saying this right here on this show, that this was going to be the excuse that they could blame. You know, why did everything shut down? Why did the economy go bad? Why was there radical inflation? Why was there, you know, global situations with natural gas and all this stuff? It's the pandemic.
Yeah, the 24/7 excuse for everything, right? All right, guys, well, we're going to continue on. Thank you for being here with us. We got a couple more we're going to dive into related to COVID, some other areas. I don't know if you caught this one, Micah, but this one came out about a week ago, just last week. It's making the rounds. This is an opinion piece published by Newsweek, written by Kevin Bass, who is a medical doctor, PhD student in medical school, titled, "It's Time for the Scientific Community to Admit We Were Wrong About COVID and It Cost Lives," which is a pretty bold statement. And I think he's been getting some support, also some hate, because some people are like, he didn't go far enough. He didn't say what I think actually happened, instead of just kind of maybe seeing this for what it is, which I think is a positive thing. The fact that this opinion piece can even be published 3 years later, and hopefully people are reading it and taking it serious and not just dismissing it. But I'll just read a couple paragraphs from this. He says that, "As a medical student and researcher, I staunchly supported the efforts of the public health authorities when it came to COVID-19. I believe that the authorities responded to the largest public health crisis of our lives with compassion, diligence, and scientific expertise. I was with them when they called for lockdowns, vaccines, and boosters. I was wrong. We and the scientific community were wrong, and it cost lives. I can see now that the scientific community, from the CDC to the WHO to the FDA and their representatives, repeatedly overstated the evidence and misled the public about its own views and policies, including on natural versus artificial immunity, school closures and disease transmission, aerosol spread, mask mandates, and vaccine effectiveness and safety, especially among the young. All of these were scientific mistakes at the time, not in hindsight. Amazingly, some of these obfuscations continue to present day. But perhaps more importantly than any individual error was how inherently flawed the overall approach of the scientific community was and continues to be. It was flawed in a way that undermined its efficacy and resulted in thousands, if not millions, of preventable deaths. What we did not properly appreciate is that preferences determine how scientific expertise is used, and that our preferences might be, indeed, our preferences were, very different from many of the people that we serve. We created policies based on our preferences, then justified it using data, and then we portrayed those opposing our efforts as misguided, ignorant, selfish, and evil. We made science a team sport, and in doing so, we made it no longer science. It became an us versus them, and they, quote-unquote, responded the only way anyone might expect to, by resisting." And then he goes on just to say how they criticized people, they cast them out, you know, created a more fractured society and just all these different things. And this is an interesting little essay. It's not super long. Of course, this is going to be linked. But that alone, again, I think it's not going to satisfy everybody. There are people who are like, but he didn't say that there's no this thing, or he didn't talk about this particular angle. Okay, I get that. But overall, this appears to be a piece that you could use. As the way I see it, it's like this is ammunition for conversations with your quote unquote normie average friends, right? Who won't listen to you. And you say, hey guys, look at this. Did you see? Look, it's not just my fringe websites anymore. It's an opinion piece by a medical doctor on Newsweek, you know, saying like, look, we're wrong. And it's got links to other pages talking about this. Maybe we should rethink this, right? If you can get people to be that rational, then that's more power to you. Obviously, some people have made their minds up long ago and they probably won't listen one way or the other. But yeah, what do you think about that, Micah? Just seeing that, you know, we're 3 years out now, 3 years into this thing. And 3 years ago is when this whole panic was really beginning. We were just at the beginning of the early stages of, oh, something's going on in China. And now people are openly admitting, like with that one we went over a couple of months ago where one of the other writers was like, hey, we need amnesty for all of those of us who made the wrong decisions. Now this person's at least saying, hey, I'm willing to admit I was wrong.
I think that maybe if nothing else, they can come to recognize that sweeping, you know, knee-jerk / gut reaction to things might not always be the best way for the whole herd to move. You know, I think that's more what it is than whether you believe this or that particular regimen was the best way to deal with it. It wasn't so much maybe advancing ivermectin or advancing even the boosters and the shots and the face masks as much as advancing the whole world view that it was face masks, boosters, lockdowns, shut-ins, all that stuff, you know, in almost a goose step fashion. That's when you got to start, you know, really wondering. I think that's more the problem than, you know, I'm not vexed. You know, I don't think people should have, you know, get that, but that's up to them. I think that it's much bigger than that, and that they have to, because it's bigger than that, they have to recognize that it was oversweeping.
Yeah. And I mean, because also that's the reason these conversations are important, is that also people lost their jobs. People, families were destroyed and broken up because, yeah, businesses, because they're like, no, you can't believe you would have this wrong, dangerous opinion that the doctors are telling me is totally wrong. And there's no way you're right. I can't believe you're this crazy. I can't believe you bought into those conspiracy theories. I can't be your friend. I can't be your brother, sister, father, mom. These things happen. I've met these people who lost family and friends. I'm sure you've heard from them as well. And it's, I don't know. I refuse to let people forget what's taken place.
Remember the Australian story where they sent these people to a voluntary camp, remember?
Quarantine camps, yeah. Involuntary quarantine camps in Canada and Australia.
Voluntary quarantine camp. I mean, that's a step away from ghettoizing an entire group of people based on their beliefs, more or less. You know, as because once you whip people up into believing to be afraid of just their neighbors to that degree, you know, I think that they're on the edge of doing, you know, animalistic, scary things in the name of, you know, community.
Exactly. Very scary things in the name of we're all in this together, protecting us from the scary thing.
Slow the spread. Well, there's the spreader.
2 weeks to stop the spread, right? Well, look, I want to go into one more COVID-related. We can get to final stories here, start to wrap up, because one of the contentious things is just a brief mention. Again, not a scientist here, not a medical student or a medical doctor, but this is a report that has been brought to my attention. It is in the Cochrane Library, the Cochrane Review, which is seen as one of the most comprehensive database of systematic reviews on all kinds of topics. This was published January 30th. 2023, 4 days ago, Physical Interventions to Interrupt or Reduce the Spread of Respiratory Viruses is the name of this review. There's an abstract, you can read the methodology and everything. I just want to go down here to some of their conclusions. This is a study basically trying to look into how effective masks are that we've all been told are so necessary over the last couple of years. The author's conclusions are interesting. They say the high risk of bias in the trials, variation in outcome measurement, and relatively low adherence with the interventions during the studies hamper drawing firm conclusions. There were additional random control trials during the pandemic related to physical interventions, but a relative paucity given the importance of the question of masking and its relative effectiveness would be highly relevant to the measurement of effectiveness, especially in children and young children. Now, this is a part I think is a little more clear. This says there is uncertainty about, there is uncertainty about the effects of face masks. The low to moderate certainty of evidence means our confidence in the effect estimate is limited and that the true effect may be different from the observed effect of the estimate of the effect. The pooled results of random controlled trials did not show a clear reduction in respiratory viral infection with the use of medical surgical masks. I'm going to say that again. The pooled results of random controlled trials did not show a clear reduction in respiratory viral infection with the use of medical surgical masks. There were no clear differences between the use of medical surgical masks compared with N95, P2 respirators, and healthcare workers when used in routine care to reduce respiratory viral infection. Hand hygiene is likely to modestly reduce the burden, and although this effect was also present,
wash your hands.
It was not found to be a significant difference for the outcomes. Harms associated with physical intervention. So it ends with, there is a need for a large, well-designed random controlled trials and addressing the effectiveness of many of these interventions and multiple settings and populations, as well as the impact of adherence on effectiveness. So they're kind of saying, like, there's not strong evidence. I mean, I think that the strongest sentence was there, that the pooled results do not show a clear reduction in respiratory viral infection using surgical masks, and that there's no clear difference between using medical surgical masks and N95s. So I got to also say it's not clear yet, you know.
So they wanted everybody to be able to wear their mask or not be able. It wasn't that. It wasn't like, finally, we're able to wear masks. Without a constitutional amendment, we can wear masks. But no, it wasn't so much that. But they were pushing on everybody. But, you know, it's so weird. So, you know, you go through and they went back and forth on the masks, even when it was going on. Yet they stopped kids from taking their security blankets and teddy bears to school. And, you know, I mean, come on. What were these things? Were they anything more to make people feel a little better, make them feel like they were doing something? Or were they to make you do something so that, you know, you identify yourself as a conformist and in line with the information?
Yeah, the mask thing has always been a weird one to me. Obviously, yeah, freedom, wear your mask and this and that. And then I see some people like, come on, man, the mask is part of the counterculture. Now we get to finally mask up. And I never bought into that. I didn't like seeing bands and people I know making masks for their brand or whatever. Just not my thing. Everybody does their own thing. But not only that, it's just that, like, this isn't the first. It's not like this is a brand new. This is a review, the Cochrane review. They do systematic reviews, as it said there. But this isn't the first study that's come out in the last 3 years pointing to, hey, maybe these masks aren't really doing anything, or maybe they're not doing what they're claiming, or maybe they're hardly effective. And even Fauci in the past said that, like, there's studies saying, like, hey, if you're getting them wet, then they're basically ineffective. If you reuse them over and over, they're basically ineffective. You could start to get, you know, acne and stuff from just breathing it in and sweating and all. You know, there's all kinds of different things. But if you even question them at all the last couple of years, you're a lunatic. I mean, I definitely lost friends over just choosing not to wear a mask. And I filmed plenty of, on the street arguments between the maskers and the non-maskers in Houston and elsewhere. And it just became such a divisive thing. But once again, the people who are questioning this, we're supposedly anti-science. We're, you know, the crazies for wondering to know if this Cochrane review should be a discussion at, you know, if it should be a topic of discussion next time somebody tells me I need to put on a mask because it's helping other people. I don't know. I don't even know if it's worth those debates anymore. I mean, what do you think, Micah? It's been 3 years now. You think anybody that was going to listen before would listen already?
I feel like we could just laugh off the masks nowadays. And that's like, you know, a double-edged sword, because I guess the efficacy of the masks is always a thing, right? You know, people are going to still believe in them because, you know, medical people wear them and they do stop something. But them being able to save you from the freaking plague is a big step. I don't know. I think you should just get people assistance if we're in that sort of situation. I don't know. I wondered, you know, we had rat hammocks all over the place for a while, and that was pretty disgusting. Just seeing, it was sort of like somebody's dirty face panties on the ground, you know? I'm like, you know, that stuff was pretty nasty. A lot of garbage. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah. And not even like just being like a Republican talking point of like, oh, look at the trash. Like, realistically, like, masks in the streets and in the ocean and in the rivers and washing up. And, you know, because people did just toss them and throw them away. And yeah. Well,
many of them came in a little plastic wrapper as well.
Exactly. They're wrapped in plastic and they're single use. Micah, we're at an hour and 15. Both of us had a Mexico story. You want to call it for the day, or you want to go into these next stories? What are you feeling?
We just got to catch up, start doing shows regularly. So, I mean, if you want to call it, I mean, we pushed the audience for a while now. There's a lot of stuff going on. If you want to go into the Mexico shows, I will, but I'm fine with covering them next week.
Yeah, I got this one, but I think it's not super pressing. It's about Mexico and geoengineering. I think it's a fairly big story, but I'd like to be able to get into it when I'm not going to rush through it. So, guys, tune in next week, and you'll hear more about this. And Micah's also got this one about Pemex destroying resources. We'll have plenty more to come next week. Of course, you can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Every single story you just heard us cover in the last hour and 15 minutes will be linked there for you to go do your own research, come to your own conclusions. Don't just blindly trust us, like we're saying with anybody. Don't blindly trust anybody. We appreciate everybody who's tuned in. Somebody gave us a nice comment earlier. They said, this is way better than Timcast. I thought that was cool. So thank you for that compliment. We appreciate that. We appreciate everybody tuned in on Odyssey, Rockfin, Facebook, everybody who will watch this in BitChute and Hive afterwards. Thanks for tuning in to us. And we'll be back next week. Should be back to regular shows for the coming weeks at least. And anything else, Micah?
Love as much as you can. Empower yourself. Love yourself. Take care of your peeps. Do what you can. Food. Get some food. Enjoy life.
Get some food before it's expensive. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Here's one of those anti-WEF artists.
all the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people wanted fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real as they claim, yeah. I'm so sick of all the fakes and the lames with no brains. Swear these people are the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people want his fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real, they claim, yeah. Everybody wanna be famous, but nobody really wanna put the work in. People be thinking that how they be thinking is how it should be, and that they know for certain. Everyone have an opinion, they say that they love you, they smile, they grinning. But as soon as you turn your back on the men and the women, they hate to see somebody winning. And that is the difference between me and you. You read a headline and think that it's true. I do not sit on the internet jealous of people because I got something to do. Look at my followers, look at my likes, look at my food, look at my wife, look at my dog, look at my life. I think that I really forgot what I like. Did it really happen if there's not a pick? All of you people are making me sick. The news doesn't care about telling the people the truth, cause they know you're still gonna click. I need a break, just give me five. Think I'm the last normal person alive. I am so sick of the people that's sick of the truth. They more entertained by the lies, damn. I'm so sick of all the fakes and the lames with no brains. Swear these people are the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people want his fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real as they claim, yeah. I'm so sick of all the fakes and the lames with no brains. Swear these people are the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people want his fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real as they claim, yeah. I'ma let you finish, God is my witness. Taking pictures in the gym, but you ain't in the fitness. Sign up for this company and you'll get hella riches. You just need all of your friends to sign up after, that's the business. People glued to their phones, they're all clones. Look at someone they don't know, like, oh my god, that's goals. Face their life on famous people's reality TV shows. Scroll on social media until their ego grows and grows. Bought a chain, but I got bills. Someone's dying, we should film famous people with no skills. Think society's gone downhill. Watch the news, now I'm broke. Agree with me or you're a joke. People flexing on the gram, holding cash, but they're broke. Damn. I'm so sick of all the fakes and the lames with no brains. Swear these people are the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people want his fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real as they claim, yeah. I'm so sick of all the fakes and the lames with no brains. Swear these people are the same, it's insane, yeah. All these people want his fame, what a shame, who's to blame? Ain't nobody really real as they claim.